All right, everybody, thanks a lot for tuning in this week for Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. For those of you that were listening last week, you may remember that we had a little contest going, and about 186 of you entered this week. You followed along on our Instagram page, whiskey_tango_foxtrot_podcast. And we asked you to do something. We asked you to share our last week's episode on your stories, and a ton of you people did that, and I really appreciate it. And we had a random winner picked by a friend of mine who just randomly went down the list and picked Mr. Cody Hubbard Hare. At Cody Hubbard Hare, you have won yourself a Victory Barber and Brand prize pack, including my very favorite Victory Barber and Brand barber apron. Congratulations on that, and we are going to be having another contest again this week, giving away some great prizes, which I'm going to tell you about after the podcast. But this week, I did the update to Catalina. I don't know any of you are working with Mac, but I did the update to Catalina, and it absolutely nuked my computer. All of a sudden, everything's up in disarray, and there's a million problems and glitches and bugs. But very fortunately, I was able to record this one a couple of months ago with one of my favorite people. Now, because it's an older recording, the sound is not going to be as good as it has gotten. I've gotten better at this. I've gotten better gear. And hopefully, you guys are noticing a difference. But bear with me on this one, because I think the content and the conversation is just that good. This is one of my favorite people to hang out with in the industry. He is the pride of Ireland. He is an absolutely amazing barber, trendsetter, very unique sense of style of his own, and I think you're going to love him. He's a little hard to understand, but we love him anyway. Mr. Ryan Cullen is this week's guest, and you are going to absolutely enjoy this. So please listen up, have a good time, and I'm going to introduce you to our next week's contest after the podcast.
You're listening to Whiskey Tango Foxtrot with your host, Maddie Conrad.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is your host, Maddie Conrad. I have had a really amazing opportunity to spend most of my life traveling around the world, meeting fascinating people in the hairdressing industry and getting to both share stages with them, really amazing opportunities. And one of the things I think is always really fun is the conversations that we end up having about the industry itself. They're the things that most people don't want to talk about on podcasts because they've got some sort of a sponsor or some sort of thing where they're afraid to talk about those things. But, you know, I think we started this podcast with the idea of kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit and showing you what life is really like on this side of things. And one of the people who I was fortunate enough to meet right here in Los Angeles, which is where we're filming from today, I actually got to meet this guy. He's from Ireland. I've known his work for a really long time. He's a very distinctive look and distinctive style. And very fortunately, one of the things we had in common is a great love of Disney. And we, in fact, met at Disneyland. And so I would like you to welcome to the podcast today, Mr. Ryan Cullen.
What is happening, guys? So it's great to be here, and obviously great to be on your podcast.
We're going to actually have to probably get a translator for you. Cause
we might, yeah. It's all E's and R's, isn't it? It's actually, yeah, sounds like a song. No,
Hey, well, thanks a lot for being here. I really appreciate you making the time to sit down with us.
Good to be here. Really good to be here.
Now, you've been out to the U.S. a little bit lately. You've been coming, you've been traveling everywhere.
Yeah, so thankfully, at the minute, due to my education and stuff, I've been able to travel all over Europe, all over the UK, and yeah, we've come across Atlantic, and we've done the East Coast of America. We're now in LA. We're in the West Coast, obviously, and it's just amazing to be able to, you know, travel the world and share your passion for the craft and hopefully help people along the way, you know.
Yeah, so tell the people that are listening, how did you get started? Like, where did you come from before the world of Instagram made you famous to everybody? Where did little Ryan Cullen find his passion and his love for hair?
So I just think that from a young age, I was always into artistic things. I mean, from no age, my mum would have told me that your brothers would have been outside playing football and you're inside painting pictures or drawing. So from the age, I've been into art. As I grew up, obviously then came into the fashion thing, came into play. Being in high school, I was very much into clothing and into fashion and into music and stuff like that. And I was very inspired by all that. Now, I didn't really think about her at the time, but going to high school and seeing all my friends with different haircuts and everything else and seeing some like really bad haircuts, I kind of knew within myself like what would look better. Now this was just all inside me, you know, never said to anybody that I would like to do it, but you just have a notion in yourself that you know what you'd like to do.
This didn't come from like an education or anything. This was something that you just knew an innate sense.
Absolutely. It was just who I was and what I was into, and it was just my whatever kind of excited me, if you like. So got into going through high school, was doing all that, but it was very much I wouldn't be a rock the boat kind of person. You know what I mean? I would just be someone who goes with the flow and just enjoys life on the daily, if you like. But going through high school,
you were a very easygoing guy.
Totally.
Like you don't really see yourself as an innovator, leader type of guy.
Not really.
Okay.
No. Which being in the position that I'm in at the minute, sometimes I wouldn't say it would overwhelm me, but you kind of feel like an imposter at times when you're at these big events. Like, I'm here in LA today and I'm amongst all these unbelievable stylists and everything, and part of me believes, like, gee, you know, how'd you get here? And why are you here? But over time, you know, through confidence of different, you know, through hearing from different people, from your peers also, you know, that you're good, you start to believe it. Yeah. And you start to see that you're good.
Yeah.
And grows confidence then.
Yeah.
You know, so I have a certain amount of confidence in myself now.
Yeah.
I'm still humble to the bone, but hear me?
Yeah.
I'm still humble to the bone, but at the same time, I am aware that I'm very good at what I do. But being here, it still doesn't resonate with me, you know, why I'm here, you know, alongside yourself and alongside.
I talk about it, we all started out as the same thing. I talk about it being like the fraud complex that we have, because when we first start out, we're afraid to tell people that we're new, right? Mm-hmm. We exaggerate the amount of time we've been doing this in an effort to make people less afraid to sit in our chair. But in doing so, we kind of take the fear on ourselves, right? And we don't have that same confidence. We have that feeling like, oh, I'm a fraud and someone's going to discover that I don't know what I'm doing. And getting into education, I mean, that's fraud level two, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's when you're standing in front of people and you're supposed to know better than them. They're someone that they look up to. You feel that sense of fraud just as much, don't you?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, I remember the first time that I was asked to cut hair in front of someone, in front of a group of people. It was at a pretty big event. It was in Manchester, and I was asked, you know, will you come and showcase some of your work? Now, it wasn't billed as an education as such. It was just a showcase.
Okay.
Will you stand up in front of all these people and cut hair for them and show what you do? Now, that was very nerve-wracking at the time. But since that, I'm doing what you've just said. I'm actually now breaking down haircuts. I'm breaking down the technical side of why I do what I do. I'm talking about the social aspect of our job. I'm talking about what I believe makes a barber a better barber, you know. And I can safely say today, sitting here with you, Maddie, that I definitely believe that I have things to show people that will make them better. I mean, I wouldn't be doing education if I really didn't think it would help you.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'd just stick to my 9 to 5. Actually, maybe 8 to 10.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was asked a question there earlier today on a different interview about, you know, would you sacrifice your clientele to focus more on education? And I couldn't say yeah. I would say no. I would probably sacrifice my education because I love doing what I do in the barbershop. I'm doing education because it's something I feel that I can actually, it's like a bonus, if you like. It's extra revenue.
Yeah.
It's also, it builds my brand more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it has so many marketing values that I can't look past.
Yeah,
if I want to progress in this industry.
I mean, there are elements of it that are fun. I mean, the travel and the relationships.
The different countries.
Yeah.
Meeting the different cultures. I'm a real culture freak. I do love different cultures. And every time I go to a different country, I totally immerse myself in that culture. I want to eat their foods. I want to try to talk about their language.
Mm.
And what an opportunity.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's not unreal to get to go and do that.
Do you feel though that I mean, a lot of people are trying to get into education now because they see it as something that isn't necessarily
they see it as a moneymaker.
Sure, but I think that's a big part of it. Yeah,
no, it is, and I don't want to come across like I'm not doing it for the money. Of course I am. But if you feel there's people do educate now, I think there's a lot of people coming on and being educators who don't really have any experience
Yeah. But why do you think they're desperate to get into education? What do you think the motivator is?
Maybe for...
Is it just the money? Sure. Are they just trying to do it for money?
It could be for the whole status. It could be for credibility. It could be for a lot of things.
Do you think that the reason that they want to get into it because of the perceived status that it has... Do you think that has to do with us and the way that we perceive our own lives on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Like when we're traveling around to different countries, People see us doing all this exciting stuff. Yeah, stuff that's the positive stuff, but there's totally bad stuff too, right?
Well, that's what social media is.
Yeah.
It's a cesspit, mate.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
We only ever showcase the positives. We don't showcase the negatives, as you just said. So people are seeing us traveling the world, always smiling. Mm. And I'm not seeing the sitting around the departure lounges, the gates, the alone time, the depression that sometimes can be in it, the stress levels.
I think people
are seeing this.
People don't pay attention to that. Maybe you even understand the loneliness that it can be.
It's such a long weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to, people say, but you're going to meet all these people who are going to host you. Mm. That's true. And it's a great opportunity, but you don't know these people. Mm. So although you're with people, you're still alone.
Yeah,
in a sense.
It's the weirdest feeling to be alone in a crowd of people that are all focused on you.
It's so crazy. And all they really want from you is your knowledge.
Yeah.
It's just, tell me more, tell me more, because they paid for your service. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're paying their hard-earned money to get you there, so they just want to... Like, just sap everything out of you.
So when you're teaching, though, when you're doing these seminars or doing showcases, do you find one more exhausting than the other? Is one harder to do than the other? Like, is education harder to do than just showcasing?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Because it takes far more energy.
Yeah.
It takes mental energy and also physical energy. It takes being the best version of yourself constantly. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. It's so draining.
Yeah.
At the end of the day of education, I mean, I've heard myself go back to my salon and say to the boys who work for me, you know what, boys, one day of education is worse than 5 days working behind the chair.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Because it's just so energy zapping.
The amount of output
on your is best form.
Phenomenal, isn't it?
It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's unreal. And you're really trying to impress the people. You want them to get their value for their money. You want them to have the best kind of word on you that... You know what I'm trying to say?
Sure, of course.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's hilarious. I think I completely agree. I think it's an interesting thing because the perception is very different than the reality. The amount of time you spend away from your family, your friends. I mean, this can all take a toll, too. I mean, you've got that both times that I've seen you, you know, your very lovely girlfriend is with you and traveling. Mm-hmm. Do you guys get to travel together very often? Or?
Well, we do. We make sure we make plans every year.
Yeah.
And go on holidays and stuff, but... Obviously, with all my education, I'm away every other weekend.
Me too.
So Carrie is very, very good to me in that sense. She's never down about it. She's always actually just saying to me, go and get it.
Yeah.
Do what you do.
Yeah.
But when she heard about the LA trip, she was like, I'm going. She's all up for this one.
I love it.
She's like, you're not going there on your own.
Yeah, it's funny. They never want to come to like Appleton, Wisconsin, but as soon as it's somewhere cool, Vegas or LA, or I'm coming to you. I'm coming with that one.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about getting into education, because I mean, a lot of people ask to get into education. They want to do a thing. I always say the same thing. I say, find something and teach another person, and you're an educator. Mm-hmm. But usually, they want the stakes to be bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And how did you find jumping into education? Like, how did you make your way into that world as an educator? What got you away from just being behind the chair and into showing other people what you do?
So I think at the start, when I got into education, it wasn't my choice. I was asked to do it. So obviously, due to the standard of my work and the intrigue from others into what I do, they asked me, would you... So there's a brand called the Great British Barber Wash. And I think, have you worked along with them?
No, I haven't been to that one. I was just at Barber Connect UK. I was doing that one.
So the guys behind the Great British Barber Wash, they said to me, man, would you become one of our educators? Because we love your work and we want to travel over Europe and get big crowds in and, you know, show them different methods and stuff. And I was like, yeah, you know what? This is maybe a good way for me to get into it. Mm. I don't have any of the hard work to do. All I do is turn up, be myself, cut hair, and build my name.
Yeah.
kind of through this organization.
Yeah.
So I did this for like a year and a half, and we traveled all over the place. It was great. I mean, there was some really good events, and the Great British Bar Bash is still going, and they do get great events. And actually, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a really good one in Dublin, where for old time's sake, I got back on board with them, because obviously it's Dublin, isn't it?
Oh,
it's my home country. And
you know, my favorite,
there wasn't going to be a show there without me.
Yeah, well, so, my favorite memories is actually just drinking Guinness in the Crow's Gate pub, and it was actually a brilliant experience.
Just drinking Guinness anywhere is the best experience.
Well, no, only in Ireland, actually, because everywhere else it tastes like garbage. True. It's nonsense. Yeah. Like, I remember I did this one trip recently where I was flying from Orlando after teaching two classes to be on stage for the British, for Barber Connect UK. And I had 15 minutes of transferring a plane in Dublin, which was just long enough for me to find a pub in the airport and drain a pint. And I tell you, it was better than a good cup of coffee. It was absolutely, it was life-giving.
Oh, that's good.
So you got into education by being asked by a larger association, but they had obviously seen your work. I mean, they had to see it somewhere.
So I would imagine this was down to me doing showcase works for different events who had asked me on board. I naturally fell into education. I never, it wasn't something I really ever wanted to do. But now I'm there, I'm going to keep continuing to do it, because I do feel that I can help others, as I've said before.
It chose you more than you chose it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And once, when I was working with the Great British Barber Bash, it just made sense for me, you know what, I've seen all the work that goes on in the back. Mm. I know how to organise this now. Mm. Why don't they just take this on the road for me and me only? So now we put together sort of a platform for me to work off my own name. My brother Luke is my manager. He takes all my inquiries, my educational inquiries, because I'm too busy within the shop.
Yeah, it's hard to balance everything.
It's hard to balance it, so I'm grateful to have the help. I think sometimes you need help.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So he takes on the inquiries, and once we gather a cluster of people up in different areas, we just go and smash it in them areas, and it's just great. And we've been doing it now for the last sort of year and a half, me and Luke together. Yeah, for a year and a half, and it just keeps going. And I'm in LA talking to you now. So, we've got a couple of big ones actually the rest of the year as well. So,
are you like me, where you're kind of surprised that this has been going on as long as it has, and it just keeps getting bigger? Like,
so,
the next thing.
So
that
here's
just surprises
way.
You?
Here's how I look at it. Right, I can't surf. Right, but here's how I look at it. I'm in the middle of a wave right now. Mm. Okay, and I'm in the middle of that wave, and I am looking good in the middle of that wave. Okay. Are you listening to this?
Yeah.
Right, so midway through this wave, all right, I can see in the corner of my eye the next person waxing up his board, yeah? But I'm in the wave right now. And I'm going to just enjoy this wave, because this wave isn't going to last forever. Okay? And I'm fully aware of that.
Yeah.
So right now, what I'm doing is I'm just riding my wave.
Yeah, I like that.
Do you know
that.
What? And you see, when I get off my wave and I'm washed up on the beach, I'll be happy as fuck, man. I'll be...
You see
ecstatic.
That wave? Do you see that ride?
Did you see me on that thing?
Yeah.
That's what I was saying to people.
So,
and you know what? And the next guy on the wave, fair play to him.
Are you the guy that's going to like pack up his board and go home when you're done, though? Or are you going to watch the next guy ride?
I'd probably just cut her for as long as I can.
Yeah.
Because I just love doing it. It's what I do. It's my lifestyle. It's what I enjoy. I get up in the morning. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't backflip out of bed to get to work. Like, you know, I don't smile all the way to work. I'm tired as fuck, you know what I mean? Like, but I get in, once I'm in, it's showtime, and I love it. It's just my lifestyle. It's just, it doesn't feel like work.
So you feel,
it's a cliche, but it doesn't feel like work.
You feel energized. No, I think, the funny thing is, though, I think people say, if you enjoy your work, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the truth of it is that if you enjoy your work, you kind of work all the time.
Yeah.
Right, and I think that's really,
it becomes your life.
That's kind of sums up what we do, isn't it? Because I mean, we go when we're home, we're behind a chair, or we're working in our shop.
Well, Matty, I watch. Like, I mean, I follow you on Instagram, and I watch you on Instagram, and your workload is mind blowing. It's absolutely mind blowing. I think I work hard, and then I go on your Instagram, and I'm like, I'm only a part timer. I feel like, you know what I mean.
And then I decided to start a podcast, and I mean, sure, because I've got nothing but free time, really. But I think the thing is like. I love all the things I do just as much as you do, but I found that I love so many things. They're so diverse interests that I love, where it's like, I love photography, I love market and brand, I love building the products, I love I love all the things that I do, that I have a hard time picking that one thing to focus on. And I always feel like I become that jack of all trades but master of none kind of thing. But well, you have stayed incredibly true to your style since I've started following you, which is years ago. And I mean, you're so much so that you have a distinct style that would be called like a Ryan Cullen type of haircut, a Ryan Cullen haircut.
To a point, though,
come up with that. Like, how did that?
So it's not that I came up with it. It's just what I naturally like to do. It's just the kind of style that I gravitate towards. But it does, I wouldn't say annoy me, but I would like to think personally that there's more feathers to my bow. I mean, I'm not just all about that. I have clients that don't really showcase too much on Instagram, who just like slick back haircuts. They just like more classical finish. They like more recreational haircuts. They don't really like all these mad, you know, trap fades with lines in the side of it or anything. You know, this is just something, these are like social media, Instagram worthy kind of haircuts, if that makes sense.
No, I totally get it. It's a wow factor haircut.
Which is probably, you know, in a sense, not really, I shouldn't look at it that way. I should be proud to put up the average haircuts, because they're not average, the same time they spent on them.
Yeah.
But I suppose this style, I was very fortunate in that I was probably one of the first people on Instagram whenever the boom started happening.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm lucky in that sense that I was just on it early.
Yeah. I think that's a thing that most of us agree on. If we built a following of some substantial number, most of us started really early. Do you think it's much harder now to build the kind of following you've created?
Well, I've just found myself, even like on social media, like focusing less on it.
Yeah.
Maybe because I've built myself up to a point now where I'm just so busy with everything in life that I don't really have time now for social media, whereas I wasn't that busy before, and all I had time for was social media to build it up. So I've just noticed less and less that I'm using it more and more. I mean, I think if you go on my last post, it's maybe over a week ago, I'd say 2 weeks on it. And like, back in the day, that like my last post would have been 2 hours ago, not 2 weeks ago.
No, me too. I find even even once a day hard to maintain for me now.
Yeah. But that's not to say like, that it's a bad thing. Social media is...
Well, let's talk about it, because I don't think social media is a bad thing in and of itself. I think it's just a thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has any agenda of its own. It's what we put in it and what we put on it.
Yeah.
But I think social media is definitely the way that I found about you and how we met. It's also, I think, done a lot of good things for education for people and getting people into education opportunities. But honestly, what do you think of the current state of social media as it relates to the industry? Is it hurting or is it harming? Sorry, I said hurting or harming. Is it hurting or is it helping?
It's a balance between the both. Mm. It's helping the people who want to use it in a helpful way, and it's hurting the people who are using it and looking upon it in the fashion. It's hard to explain what I'm trying to say. I think it's hurting people that are too involved in it in an emotional sense. Mm. I think it's helping the people who are using it for the reason that I think it's really good for, which is your marketing, which is your free publicity, which is your ability to showcase how proud you are of what you're doing. I think the people who are getting hurt by it are somewhat emotionally attached to it in a negative way, and it can be damaging to them.
I think people are looking for a lot of validation from it, you know, that same thing we were just talking about, how you feel that sense of validation because the people around you you respect start telling you you're good, you start to believe it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I feel like people are looking for that answer from Instagram, from a bunch of strangers. And not necessarily strangers, all of them, but I think the interesting thing that you see is that the need for that validation starts to create bad or false behaviors. Right? I mean,
absolutely.
We were kind of having a conversation earlier about how there seems to be people trying to cheat the system or trying to cheat the algorithm or whatever by commenting or becoming part of pods or things like that, with their whole goal of like increasing their follower, but their follower number gives them this little like dopamine idea of like success, and it's creating this false sense of...
Without a doubt, it's creating this alter ego, this kind of this showman that never really existed before. And you know what? That showman within them can grow to be bigger than the person that they really are. And then what happens is when the shit hits the fan, they're going to go back to the person that they really are, and not be able to fucking deal with it because the show madness took over. Does that make sense?
I totally agree with you. I think that's an interesting thing and a hard thing to balance.
Yeah,
because totally. We all love to feel appreciated for our work. We all love to feel respected. Yeah. But I think there comes a point where
it becomes
about the animal of trying to get attention rather than respect. And they're not really the same thing, are they?
I think people aren't stupid. Yeah. Okay, I think most people who are going to listen to this podcast are going to totally be on the same wavelength that we're on. We're just really reiterating what people are thinking right now in how we're chatting. But...
because I mean, I've been on stages before where I sat in front of a whole bunch of barbers, right? And I thought to myself, I'm just going to go for it and be like, look, I feel like Instagram is starting to become the world's biggest circle jerk for barbers. It's a bunch of people high-fiving each other for haircuts that aren't even really in fashion anymore. They're just hair art. They're becoming hair art rather than wearable stuff. And like you said, most of the stuff you post on Instagram is the stuff you deem Instagram worthy. And the stuff that is commercial, it's not as interesting, but it's really what clients are asking for the most part, right? So are we creating this false disconnect of hair art from actual trends, like actual hair trends?
Well, it's a funny one, that because if you look at some of my most recent work, I've been doing the same haircuts 4 years ago. And they still pack as big a punch today as they did 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I believe that if they're technically well done, and if they're visually appealing, and there's a certain amount of artistic flair in them, of course they're still going to be trendy.
Yeah.
Because they're well done and they're well executed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm a broken record in the sense that's the only haircuts I can do. Like, it's surely not. And I mean, it's just merely what I like doing. And why would I try to be somebody I'm not and please the masses?
I think what I really liked about you today, watching you on stage too, is you're naturally always yourself. It's a thing that I really think is one of the most important things about an educator or about anybody that's trying to build a brand for themselves, as much as I hate using that term because I think it cheapens it. Mm-hmm. But I think that your ability to just always be yourself, and you're naturally incredibly funny, but in a really low-key way. Mm-hmm. Like, you make jokes that you're not waiting for people to, like, laugh at. You're just, like, naturally funny the whole time. Like, when I watch you over-dramatize putting the cape on somebody make the eyebrows at everyone, all you're doing, like, it had me in stitches.
The thing is, when I educate, this is really sad to say this, but I laugh at myself more than anyone else does in the room. I make these little, small, subtle jokes that I really get kicks out of inside myself. And no one in the room laughs, but you know what? I don't really care. I just keep going anyway.
I think the first time I met you, you had made a joke about the fact that you're a grown man that looks like a boy band from the 90s. And I think that's always...
And I'm proud of it. Without a doubt. Backstreet's back.
I feel like this is a Canadian thing and probably an Irish thing too, that something we have in common is the self-depreciative nature of our humor, where we make more fun of ourselves than people make of us.
Probably. I think if you can't laugh at yourself, well then, no point taking part or no point being in the room. Don't get me wrong, I don't laugh at myself in the sense that I'm not like insecure in myself. Well, maybe. I mean, I think, I've opened a can of worms. Insecurities, I think we've all got insecurities to a point. But I'm not that insecure in myself that I feel that I'm any lesser than anyone. I do go into, like, don't get me wrong, today's event, like in LA, Los Angeles, there are people in that room who are just fashion icons, and I'm relatively normal in my clothes choice and what I wear. But you know what? It is what it is. And I'm happy and I'm comfortable in what I am. I don't need to wear loads of Gucci and shit, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's cool for those who do.
Sure. Oh yeah. I don't think
I less of myself because I'm not that hype.
Yeah. I think as I've gotten older too in this, I've settled more into my own style and I'm more confident in the sense that it's just like,
the older we get, the more comfortable we get in ourselves. And
do you have a personal fashion icon, like somebody that you look at and you think their style is like, that's cool, that's what I want to?
I do, yeah. But it's totally not it's not what I vibe.
That's all right. Like, who is it?
Like, right, I like that kind of, you know, David Beckham look, right? Where it looks like you haven't tried, but you're cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Like a raggedy t-shirt.
Yeah.
Distressed t-shirt, pair of jeans that look 20 years old.
Yeah. There's something about effortless cool. I think I feel like James Dean pretty much coined that idea of effortless cool. Like I woke up like this and didn't put too much effort in.
Yeah.
And there's something cool about that because it conveys a subtle confidence that you have where totally. It's not about looking polished and put together. Yeah. It's not about the facade.
But you know they've tried.
Oh yeah. You know how expensive those ripped t-shirts are?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I've looked them up. That's why I don't wear them.
Yeah, those distressed jeans cost money, kid. It's funny though. I think my fashion icon has always been like a young Kenny Rogers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That kind of like, does he ride a motorcycle? Does he ride a horse? You know, I mean, there's a vibe in there.
Well, you're nailing it. Yeah, you're absolutely nailing that one. Yeah.
How important do you think it is to embrace your own personal style, your own personal persona as an educator, as a barber behind a chair? How valuable do you think that is?
It's 50% of what I think. It's 50% of what I teach.
Yeah.
50% is the technical side of it, and the other 50% is owning your own kind of authenticity. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Being yourself.
Yeah.
Being true to yourself and not trying to be something you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, I keep harping on about it, but I mean, it's just so true. Everyone who barbers are individual. You're not going to be the same as someone else, so don't try to be. Mm. Be you and be proud of it and keep going, keep pushing on and show honesty to your client and just totally invest in them.
Yeah.
And you're going to get it back. What's the old saying? Is it pay it forward?
Yeah.
Is that the one? If you pay it forward, if you're always giving out good, you get it back tenfold. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
So just honestly believe that and do it. And you never know, you know, where you'll end up.
I think what you said about authenticity is really important because authenticity is a word that gets thrown around a lot these days, mm-hmm. right? And people talk about it as if it's this thing that you paint on stuff to make it look old, you know, or original or something. But it's not that. Like, it's the idea of being 100% yourself all of the time, damn the consequences, mm-hmm. right? Without worrying about what the repercussion of that is. That's mm-hmm. authenticity.
Yeah.
And your work is definitely that, and you're that all the time. That's one of the things I appreciate about you.
Yeah, I try to be. It's easy to get sucked into. It's easy to get sucked into being something you're not, especially if you're in a group of people where the overriding vibe in the room is a certain vibe. It's very easy to get sucked into that. But I think as I've got older, what I've learned to do is just to stay true to myself and be what I am and be who I am. And you know what? Your vibe attracts your tribe. So be around the people you want to be around. So give out the energy you want to get back.
So do you take that same approach with your clientele?
I just chucked a whole bunch of cliches out at you.
I loved it though.
Wasn't that
it's like
awesome?
You know, it was like Brene Brown.
I was like, you didn't think I'm looking at Google right now.
It was Brene Brown worthy. It was amazing. I feel like you should have a podcast.
Don't tap me.
Do you take that same approach with your clientele though? Like, I mean, the idea of the vibe attracts the tribe. Are you selective with the people you cut hair for?
Well, I can actually see it. This is massive to say this. Every single one of my clientele, I love each one of them. They're all brilliant people. I get on with every one of them. We've got relationships built up. So to answer that question, the people who have come to me in previous haircuts who maybe didn't really click with me as a person, they don't come back to me.
Yeah.
And that's 100%. See, with me, that is no problem.
Yeah.
I am looking after people who want to be in the chair.
I think that I've always said that the recipe for success, I couldn't tell you that, but the recipe for failure is trying to please everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that when we get into the industry and we start out, there's this need to like be all things to all people and to please everyone around us because it's kind of a bit of our personality, the type of people that get into hair. But as I've gotten older, the understanding of the selectivity that you spend, like really wanting to focus around the people that just you love being around is more about the fulfillment you find in your job than anything else. Because success and fulfillment are not exactly the same thing, are they? You can be really, really busy and have the appearance of success, but be really miserable doing it, even though you're chock full of clients and booked solid, you know, as far in advance. I had that and I ended up giving that up to get into barbering where I was taking walk-in clients. You know, so having that kind of thing.
Well, I've had clients, don't get me wrong, I have had clients and where I didn't, I cut their hair because, look, they're paying me for my service.
Yeah.
All right, so it's my job to cut their hair to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that. but over time that person has kind of just filtered out of my clientele.
Do you steer them that way, or is it just naturally they fall out of the fold?
Naturally, and I think it's down to an energy thing.
So you've never actually given somebody a bad haircut intentionally
I've never actually told someone not to come back to my salon. I've never said, please don't come back again because you're an asshole. I've never said that.
Have you ever wanted to?
Yes. But I've never done it because out of professionalism.
Yeah, that's it.
And out of what's the old saying, the customer's always right.
Yeah, but are they?
Yeah. No.
Do you really think that, though? I mean, I think we grew up in a culture...
No, they're not. They're not, because someone comes in with no hair on the top and they want a fucking Johnny Bravo. They're not going to get it, so they're wrong.
Yeah, of course. But I think we grew up in a culture where the consumer market got so competitive that became a thing, because everyone is trying to out-customer service each other by going, anything you want. But now the sense of entitlement exists so that people will buy things. Like, people buy clothes, wear them 5 times, and then take them back for a full refund. And that's a reasonable expectation for people now. But that's insane if you think about it. And as it comes to the hair industry, I feel like because of things like Yelp and because of online reviews and stuff, we've never been in a worse time to provide service to the public for fear of retribution online, where somebody whose needs weren't met, whether they're reasonable or not, will take vengeance for those
here.
Things. Yeah.
What is Yelp? I've heard people talk about it earlier.
I don't have Yelp.
What is this?
Okay, so it's an online review.
It's like TripAdvisor.
Yeah, kind of, but for services and shops and restaurants and hairstylists. Okay. And so people will go on and they'll leave reviews, good or bad. But predominantly what seems to be happening is that the bad reviews sit somewhere near the top, unless you're advertising with Yelp, in which case then they magically disappear or go to the bottom.
No way.
And I don't want to say it's extortion, but it's kind of extortion. Here's the thing, though, is...
Right.
Online reviews do more or less kind of harm a business if they're bad reviews. And Google or whatever. So have you ever had to deal with that?
No, never, there was never that opportunity for people to verbally attack us online.
Yeah.
There is nowadays because of all these platforms, these social media platforms, but we never had that. We only had word of mouth, and I've always only ever given people 100%.
Yeah.
And even there's a saying, Matty, and I remember you said this in your Hurry Jam that you can buy online, everyone. You said, and I remember this, and this sticks with me, and this is something I use in all my educations and stuff, and it's actually, but it's so true. About 7 out of 10 people, they don't know the difference between a good haircut and a great one. The people who know the difference between a good haircut and a great one are us, the barbers, the hairstylists, who are probably the most fussy critic on our own work.
Yeah.
Okay, let's face facts. We really are. Now, the person, what they can tell the difference is good service and bad service.
Every time.
Okay, and they know they're between good service and great service. So if you give someone great service on an average haircut, they're going to be a client for life. They're going to come back to you. So all I've ever done is give someone 100% of my professionalism, and I've chucked in a bit of crack in there. No, that's crack.
That's Irish
banter.
There it is.
There you go. Clear that up.
I feel like the disclaimer needs to be.
Yeah. So.
The secret to his success is he gives his clients crack.
Just feed them full of drugs, everyone. Yeah. The fucking party.
I think that's actually big. I think customer service is a lost art these days. And
it is. And it's something that I love teaching and try to help throughout my education. It's one of the main things that I am really grateful that I went to hairdressing college for. We were taught about professionalism, about looking after the client in that manner, about how to conduct yourself, how to hold yourself. I mean, if you go to a barbering school, you're thrusted into the deep end. Just cut his hair. Next please, next please, next please. It's a chain, isn't it? So in hairdressing, what one of the main things I took out of it was how to hold myself, how to be professional, and how to make sure that person knows they're getting a good service. So they go back to their mates. And let's face facts, when men get good service like this, they're fucking wowed by it.
Yeah.
because they don't get it anywhere. Like, women are used to it in salons, so it doesn't mean shit to them. They expect to get good service. So when they leave the salon, they're like, yeah, they were pretty good. They looked after me pretty good, but, you know, I might try that one down the road later on, you know, I might try that salon. Men, when they get good service like that, leave, and they tell their mates, tell you what, look, your man up around the corner, he's fancy. He looks after you. He asks you all these questions and everything about your haircut and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, we should be doing this.
Do you feel like guys were overlooked in the salon environment for such a long time that when it came time for more of a men's focus thing, we started seeing evidence of that? Like, guys were coming in going like, wow, this is what it should be like.
Yeah. Never have I witnessed before than today the amount that men are into their images. They're so into getting good haircuts. They're so into looking after themselves cosmetically and, you know, with their hair. And it's not even a vain thing. It's not a vanity thing. They're doing it because it's the options are there to take. You know, so what am I trying to say here in a roundabout way? But if a man can go down the street, and on one side of the street is, you know, Joe, who's a really good barber, but you know what? He's pretty straightforward. You get a good haircut, but it is what it is. On the outside of the street, you've got John, right, who's fucking equally as talented technically as Joe. But what do you get in John's shop? Customer service. You get a tentative, you know, questions. What do you like? What do you not like? You know, what way do you normally wear this? You get what's called, you get good service. Now, who are you going to choose?
Every time.
And so what if he's like $5 or $10 more? You know you're getting what you want because he's spending time.
This is a thing that's interesting because Ireland especially, wow, like barbering blew up in Ireland really
right
quick
now,
and short amount of time.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm Irish. And I'm obviously very proud of being Irish. And I'm very proud of all my friends now who are barbers in Ireland. But I have, when I started barbering or hairdressing in Ireland 15 years ago, it wasn't cool to be a barber. And I will say that now. I'll go out, you know, anybody who's Irish wants to get back to this podcast, leave feedback saying he's talking shit. They're not gonna, because this is the truth. It was seen as a woman's job to be a hairdresser back in the day. If you're gonna cut men's hair, get in a line. It's military. Okay. Barbering or men's hairdressing, whatever you want to call it, today in Ireland is phenomenal. There's so many brilliant ones.
Absolutely.
Because you know what I've learned about the Irish people? See, when Irish people want to be good at something, they're extremists.
Yeah.
They get really fucking good at it. Like, I do so many educations all over Ireland because people want to learn so much how to get good.
It was actually one of my favorite classes to go teach was in Dublin. And the crowd was one of the most engaged crowds I've ever seen.
Because they really care.
But the competition level has become so high now too, right? Yeah. The quality has gone up. And there's so many shops everywhere. How is that as a market to work in now? Is it there's too many shops? Is that hurting the existing shops? I mean, it seems that everybody wants to go work in a shop for 6 months, then go open their own.
It's like I keep hearing of shops opening, but I don't often hear of shops closing down.
Not fair.
So there are people for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think the best bit of advice for anyone who owns a shop is to worry just about your own shop. Just worry about your own shop. Don't worry what, you know, the guy in the street's doing or this new shop that came in. Like, wish him luck.
Yeah.
But look after your own clients. Because if you do that, you're going to be, everyone will be successful. But no, Ireland, there is a lot of barber, like, it's booming in Ireland at the minute. It just keeps going up and up.
So is that doing good things for the industry or is it doing bad things for the industry?
Like, it's doing good things in that it's raising the profile of our industry.
Yeah.
You know, people now take our industry really serious. It's a really, what I'm trying to say, it's a job that's seen as not a delicacy. What would you say? Like, it's
more high profile.
It's high profile, but there's a word I'm trying to think of. This happens to me a lot. And this always happens to me in education. And you know what happens? I ask the crowd for a brownie point and they always answer it. It happened today, so it did actually. But no, it's seen as a job. This job is seen as a job now that's more of, there's a real flair for it. I thought, that's not even what I'm looking to say. But anyway, I'm going to move on.
Now, what do you think, in all honesty, what's going... We've talked about a lot about the industry growing and things getting better, and the quality of men's hair has never been higher, and I think that's awesome, and it's happening globally. This is all happening globally, and it's hitting at different times, but it's amazing to see most markets now growing with that. But do you see anything going wrong in the industry? Do you see anything going off the rails?
To a point. There's been times where I've been working in the shop and people have came in looking for jobs, and straight away in the first 2 seconds of their demeanor, you can sort of tell that they don't really know what the job's about. They don't really want to be a barber. They're seeing the sort of social media aspect where it's, you get to wear your own clothes, you get to look like you're always happy, you get to do this job where it's all fashion conscious, people always look good, and I just think it's easy. I think they think it's really easy. I think this job is seen as by the majority public that it's an easy job.
Yeah.
When it's really, really not. And we can sit here and talk about this, Matty, and we know deep down that this is not an easy job. It's actually a very hard job. But there's a lot of people now who think it's just a chance to look cool or
wear the latest trainers.
Yeah, to be all hype.
Dress in supreme gear, wear like a
absolutely, yeah.
And
yeah.
All the fashion element of it is there.
Yes, which is cool for those people who do it. And,
totally.
You know, we're not bashing on that.
No,
we're not, because I have some friends who are the most cool. They're like, so cool. Like,
yeah.
But, yeah, there's people that are, there's more and more young guys and girls coming into this job who just think it's about being, they're totally, totally image conscious as opposed to what the real element of the job is.
What do you think is the most real element of the job? Like, what is the thing that you wish that barbers learned earlier on that they were focused more on when they started?
I think it's down to making people feel good and look good.
Yeah.
Feel good and look good are the two main things for me. Obviously, when you have someone in your chair, you invest in them. Give them all you have and make sure when they leave that shop they're happy. And see, when you do that, for me, you're complete and barbering.
Is there a secret to it? Like, have you figured out a secret to that?
Yeah, just like eat as many joke books as you can, you know what I mean? Just eat them all, like digest every joke book you can find, and you're gonna smash it. Absolutely smash. No, there's no secret to it. The secret is just to be yourself. And I mean, somebody asked me earlier on, what if you're being yourself is not working?
Yeah.
Probably not, barber's not your job then. Probably go and do something else. But I think if you're yourself and you're honest and all those things, I mean, it is what it is.
I think there's only a few personality types that wouldn't flourish in barbering if they really wanted to.
Mm. But yes, I agree with you there.
I think that it is requires certain aspects of a personality that some people are not willing to invest their time in or take as seriously.
But then they should be barbers.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? Then don't be a barber.
Yeah.
It's not just about cutting hair in this job.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of things. There's a lot of aspects to it.
So what music is playing in your shop right now?
Probably... Well, one of the boys in holidays, the other boys, probably some sort of dance, EDM crap right now.
Is that because you're not there?
Absolutely.
When you're in the shop, what do you play?
When I'm in the shop, we're probably playing something quite commercial, because I'm a real pleaser. If we're playing commercial shit, everyone likes, there's something everyone's going to like. But no, what I would like, I like acoustic rock and stuff. Yeah. I like bands, I like your Kings of Leon vibe and stuff like that. That's what my vibe is. But the young guys that work with me, like, I'm 34 coming now in a month, and the next eldest to me in my shop is 21.
Ooh,
like, there's a big gap there.
There is.
So they think what I play is pure old man stuff.
I think the two things that I've learned from traveling around to as many shops I've seen is that everybody hates the lighting that they work in and can't stand the music that gets played. Every single shop I've been to, that's true of all the staff. And I've never seen anybody love their lighting or the music situation. How is it for you managing, like owning your shop and managing young barbers? Like, how is that as a role for you? Because you're now not just an educator and a barber yourself, but you're also a business person, shop owner. You wear a lot of hats. So how is that?
What I think the best thing to do is to showcase, lead by example to the young lads. Tell them to, when they've got a free moment, to shadow you, watch you. And I'll never have a free moment because I'm always busy. But I think if you live by example, if you teach them the core elements, which I think are good manners. So always mind your manners and always have attention, always kind of own an attention to detail that goes beyond what is necessary, if that makes sense. So cover every corner and make sure the person always feels wanted in the shop. And I just think if you do that, but I definitely tell the lads, I really encourage individuality. I just say, look, lads, don't copy what I'm saying. Sometimes I do hear the boys in the shop crack the same jokes I crack, and that makes me giggle inside, because then I'm thinking, they think I'm cool. I'm like, yeah, they're like, they're trying to be me, which is to me is pretty cool. But I'm like, no, look, it works. That kind of thing works to a point. But I encourage individuality. I tell them to just always have good manners and just enjoy what they're doing. And see, the moment they don't enjoy what they're doing, come have a chat and we'll iron out the creases and listen, if there's something else you'd rather do.
It's like no ongoing problem. Coaching. It's nice though.
This has happened though to me before. Like a young lad who worked in my shop came up to me and he said, Ryan, I don't think barbering's for me. And I said, well, isn't it absolutely amazing that you've recognised that and that you've come to me to tell me that and not just left, you know, and not knowing what to do. So we actually sat there and I said, well, big man, I said, look, what do you think you'd like to do? And he said, like, maybe go into business or something. And I said, well, wait, if that's what you're feeling, absolutely all the power to you, and go and get it, good man. But like, you've tried out barbering, it wasn't for you. You were brilliant while you were here with me, but go and crack on, do whatever it is, it's going to make you happy. So yeah, I don't put too much pressure on my staff. My staff actually would tell you, like, I'm probably need to put more pressure on them. They're getting a friggin' field day in the place.
It seems though that they're like an influence for these guys, though. I mean, if they're telling your jokes and wanting to be like you, you're clearly an influence to these guys.
Okay, I know I am. Yeah.
Now, who influences you? Like, who do you look at? Because I think the weird thing is like that the higher you start to climb. Not that I think things are a ladder, but the more prestige or prominence I think you get in the industry, the lonelier it kind of gets. Mm-hmm. And who do you look at? Like, who do you look at for inspiration? Like, what do you or is there anybody? Or do you just kind of focus on what you do, or do you look around at other people's stuff too?
It's hard to know. I'm inspired by. I'm inspired by, firstly, my work ethic. So the fact that I just want to keep pushing boundaries inspires me. I'd never really settle for what I have right now in terms of working. In my life, I love my life outside of work. I love everything about it. But in terms of work and my and what I know I can do, I know there's more. So my kind of passion for wanting to be better inspires me. But in terms of people, who inspires me? People inspire me like the people who are always reaching boundaries that you never think they're going to get to. Okay, so people like, do you know who's a big inspiration of mine right now? And he's very current, but he just seems to be smashing it. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
I did not expect that as an answer. So
I know, but like,
explain that.
Do you follow The Rock online?
I do, actually. Funnily enough, yeah.
Is he not the most perfect human being ever?
Yeah, I mean, I guess awesome. It depends on what you categorize as perfection.
Right,
but yeah.
I'm not going to have. I'm not going to have biceps and triceps like him, like, or hopefully a bald head. But it's just so inspirational the way he dictates himself through life. With his success, with his everything that he's, his credentials, he's just keeping himself so grounded. And he said a thing there about 2 weeks ago that really resonated with me. In order for you to grow, and in order for you to move forward, you can't forget the people around you. You got to bring everyone with you. And when you bring everyone with you, you're going to go even further than you thought you'd go. So don't forget the people around you. But like Maddie, I mean, not because you're sitting here, you inspire me. Andrew inspires me. There's so many more people inspire me. There's people inspire me not even for their technical ability, not even for how good their work is. It's just for their cold persona. I mean, even Sophie that I've talked to today.
No, Sophie Park.
Sophie's inspiring because she's such a philosopher and a positive thinker and all that. But it's just, you know, I get inspired by everyone. I mean, there's people even in this room now as we're talking that inspire me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not just even on a hairdressing basis. It's just us people.
Yeah.
I'm inspired by people.
Yeah.
in everything that they do and stuff. And it's a hard question to answer that, isn't it? Who inspires you?
I think it's important to analyze. I think it's important to analyze because we can get so busy doing all of this and keeping up. I mean, every weekend or every other weekend, rather, is that's a heavy schedule.
I mean,
and it can just turn into survival mode after a while without having any idea of where you want to go.
Recently, there up until about 3 weeks ago,
I was
totally neglecting my physical appearance, my whole health and everything. And I got on board. I got a PT and I got on board with good nutrition and training. And you know what, in the past 3 weeks since I've been training and eating clean and eating good, I mean, just finding that balance helped me even mentally so much.
So much.
I think we can work so much in that we'll work ourselves into the ground.
Life on the road takes you out.
It does,
it's very hard.
So the balance is key. So that's probably another reason why I'm going to keep pushing forward, is just to try to keep that balance.
Yeah.
And chase that six pack.
No.
Which is a bit, I would say,
keg and get that six pack back. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now, okay, what is your favorite hair trend right now? Like, what's your favorite trend in hair?
So, my favorite trend in hair is anything that's kind of, I would say, anything that's visually just stimulating. Like, anything that's artistically just intriguing. Like, I love crops. I know they've been around a long time. I just think they're so dramatic. I just think they're they pack such a punch when they're done well. I'm loving all these square shapes that's around at the minute. I mean, there's so many interpretations of all these angled haircuts that are amazing. I mean, I'm intrigued in skin fades because they're all we seem to keep seeing at the minute. No, being a barber and knowing how intricate and how hard they are to do, I respect anyone who can bash them out flawlessly. I mean, I would admit I am not the best skin fader in the world, far from it, but I'm intrigued by people who just make it look so effortless.
Yeah. I'm always embarrassed to show people mine. I just feel like it's not my strongest.
Yeah. Oh, well, your strong point, Matty, is that you're you and that you're true to yourself.
Oh.
But the thing
there's
is
a lot of love in this room.
I'm intrigued just by art, like art in a sense. Anything that's kind of different, and anybody who wants to push through boundaries, I'm all for it, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm really bad on social media. I'm a real bad liker. I don't like nothing. I'm a real scroller, which is fucking awful.
Which is really funny because like you will comment on stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't like stuff.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I forget,
like,
the double,
you and I will
I forget
have random
the double
conversations. Just, like,
I comment on it and go, that's fucking awesome, but I forget to like it. It just, like, when I'm scrolling, see, I try to limit my, like, my time on Instagram and stuff and looking up all this stuff. So whenever I see something that really intrigues me, I just comment on it.
What do you think is, what do you think about the trend right now where people are just commenting with the intention of creating more following rather than commenting for genuine, like,
approval? Are you talking about, like, automated comments, or are you talking about the...
Maybe both.
They're consciously doing it.
I think there's a thing where people are commenting. I've noticed a big uptick in this lately. People are tagging other artists and then commenting...
For their own good.
Just for their own good. Not for the benefit of the person that posted, but for their own good to get more visibility.
Well, it's...
It's like a weird...
It's probably not... It's probably more psychologically damaging to the person than what they think it is. I mean, because if you're commenting on someone's work for your own good and not really for what you mean, I mean, Jesus, you have to take a look in the mirror and think about what you're doing. It's probably more detrimental to you than you really can imagine, because there's obviously a massive insecurity there, and there's obviously a massive need to feel like that you're superior to people than you need to have.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. I think it's interesting. If you had one trend that you could knock off the face of the earth, like, what's the thing that you wish would die?
Not too sure. I mean, I like everything to a point. Like, I like all... I'm in the old fashioned sense to a point. I'm not going to say mullets because I fucking dig mullets.
I used to say mullets, but I feel like I've come around on mullets now because I see them now and I think they're cool.
No, they're like, I do dig a mullet. Like,
it wasn't that long ago that I would say the word mullet in a class and people would just giggle. And
now
it's
like,
shut up.
Do you know what I kind of don't like, and I'm, oh, I'm going to sound like such a hypocrite, because some of my previous work, if you scroll through some of my work, I'm not really big into the big, heavily paced apart finishing on haircuts.
Yeah.
The Sonic the Hedgehog.
Like the perfectly
stuff.
Placed, yeah.
The, like, the Tekken 3 kind of stuff. What do you call it? Like,
yeah, it's like,
the Tekken, you know, it's almost like too try hard.
Yeah.
And you're trying to make it look like something.
But you feel like nobody's going to recreate that on their own hair. That was clearly put there by a staff.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're not going to do that. Maybe like the heavy twists, like Garth Gates, like stuff.
Yep. Amazing. I think we can knock that one off for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to close this thing up because we've been having a nice little chat here. I've really appreciated the time. I want to ask you one thing, just to end off the podcast, that I'm asking everybody. What do you want to be remembered for?
My boy band looks and my wit and my six pack.
Okay, well, I think we've done that in space.
I just want to be remembered. I would like to be remembered as someone who just genuinely cares for his industry and for the people that he looks after, and I care for every other stylist in their quest to be as good as they want to be.
I think that's an amazing answer.
So put that on my gravestone. Right?
I have really enjoyed our time together.
And Inverted Commas, the man who cares.
I love that. And right? I think you are that without question. I think I'll definitely be able to write that on your tombstone. And yeah, I've really appreciated the time. I love spending time with you. You and I are great friends, and I appreciate our friendship.
We're going to go now and have a whiskey.
Yeah, we are going to go and drink whiskey now. So that means we're signing off. Thanks for listening today. We'll catch you next time on Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Bye, everybody. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with the legend, one of the nicest guys in barbering, Mr. Ryan Cullen. Now, I'm pretty excited about doing this week. I'm going to be heading to London. In fact, by the time you're all listening to this, I will be in London, England, doing some recording with some of my favorite people, doing a show over there with Behind the Chair for On Tour. And we've got some pretty exciting content coming up. So we're going to make sure we're able to share that with you guys. And all I need you to do is go to IG and follow whiskey_tango_foxtrot_podcast. Go do that and share this week's episode in your stories, and we're going to enter you to win another prize pack this week that's going to contain some of my favorite merch and some of my favorite goodies from Victory Barber and Brand. We've got a cool trucker hat, a t-shirt, some other cool goodies that you're going to want. So make sure you go follow along, participate, share us in your stories, and we will see you next week for another exciting episode of Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Bye-bye, everybody.